Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And we have an email that we're going to read for you. We often read emails on the show or YouTube comments, various forms of correspondence, and most of them, nearly all of them, are science-based. They either add to something we've already talked about, maybe critique what we've talked about, but it's connected to science. This one's not. There's no science in this one. This is an email from Willie, who calls himself a business executive. And he writes, hi, DW. I'm checking in to see whether you're interested in getting the list of distribution member list. The list of distribution member list. And then two bullet points. Mustang Chamber of Commerce 2024, Oklahoma, USA. Second bullet point. 1,000 plus contacts. I'm waiting for your response so I can let you know the, and this part is highlighted yellow, so I can let you know the price and additional information. Regards, Willie hyphen business executive. Willie, if you're listening, go ahead and send. Go ahead and send.
Do you get mad a lot, Connor?
Try not to as much. Yeah. It's like phases. You have a couple months.
Where angry.
You have a couple months where you're angry more often than usual, and then you have a couple good months. The sun's out right now in the Northern Hemisphere. Yeah. That's making me happier. So right now, not too much, but yeah, more than I used to.
Yeah. Seneca wrote a treatise on anger a long, long time ago with a lot of wise tips on how to keep anger out of your life.
Greek philosopher?
He was a Stoic, belonged to that school of thought and wrote this text hundreds, thousands of years ago on what to do about anger. It's still referred to today when it comes to anger. You were speaking a couple of weeks back with tips.
Yeah. That's what I was just thinking is we very recently on the show, we're talking about how some of the tips that I'd learned growing up were completely false. So if you're angry, what you should do is breathing exercises, meditation, mindfulness, possibly yoga. What you should not do is what I've had always been doing, which is to exercise vigorously. That makes you more aroused in the sense of more emotional.
Yeah.
And what you should not do is vent, because venting, even though it feels good, doesn't actually lower your anger. It may even increase your anger.
Yeah. The problem with the Seneca text, to come back to that, I mean, these things are vague and very...
Give me one of his tips. I want to hear his tips.
Recognize anger is not useful. Choose your friends wisely. Use art and music. Make a tranquil mind your highest aim. Learn your triggers. See yourself in the offender. You know, great on paper. But in real life, will these work in an instance where you're very angry? Just tell yourself, make a tranquil mind your highest aim. What's that going to do?
Yeah.
Let's go to the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
There was a study done in Japan on a very specific way to deal with anger, and it has to do with writing your thoughts down on paper and throwing the paper away
or
destroying the paper. Let me just take you through the study that they did. So they had two groups, and with each of these groups, they had them write, first of all, an essay. These are students. They wrote an essay about the topic of whether smoking should be banned in public, right? Everyone's got something to say on that topic. They wrote their essay, and then their essay was judged by someone they thought who was genuinely judging or appraising their
essay. Quality of the essay.
They said they had low intelligence, there was no interest, there was no friendliness, there was no logic, and there was no rationality. And a quote from the grade that they got from this person assessing this text: "I cannot believe an educated person would think like this. I hope this person learns something while at the university."
Okay,
this
so they're
was
not,
to make these people angry.
They're insulting them. You're an idiot. You're a fool. Even though they'd put their maybe not their heart into this paper, they've put a lot of effort into it, and they get hit with an emotional bat.
Right. So before they wrote this thing, they assessed their anger. So they've got a baseline. Then they measured their subjective anger after being dressed down by this university instructor.
And it went up, for sure.
People were very angry. Then the two groups, one of the groups, after writing the thoughts down about how they feel, And from an analytical perspective, why are you angry?
Oh, writing so they could step back and actually analyze where that anger came from.
The first group took that piece of paper that they wrote their thoughts down and placed it on the table, right in front of them. The next group destroyed that piece of paper with a paper shredder or threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And the researchers wanted to find out what happened between those two groups, the ones who wrote their thoughts down and kept the paper right in front of them, and the ones who wrote the thoughts down and discarded or got rid of the anger.
Or even actually destroyed them.
Huge difference. A huge difference. The people who had the paper in front of them, they were still angry. They assessed their anger a third time, both groups. They were still as angry as they were after the second measurement when they were humiliated or insulted. The group that got rid of the paper by throwing it away or by shredding it, their anger had been eliminated, disappeared. It went all the way back to the baseline.
That's incredible. How many?
50. It started with 59, and 9 people guessed in the course of the experiment what was going on,
they figured it out.
Yeah. Get out of town. You're too smart.
You cracked the
code.
You're
too perspicacious. Yeah. So 50 people, and according to the researchers, there was enough. The power ratio, the power rating of this study, it was enough to say that there were enough people to make these results valid. But it was unbelievable, and the concept that they were using, that they were studying, is something called, I didn't know this, backward magical contagion.
What?
Yes. So it refers to the idea that you can take something of your essence, confer it onto an object, in this case a piece of paper, take your anger, transfer it into the paper, and if you then get rid of that paper, you're getting rid of the thing that you got rid of from yourself. You got rid of your own anger.
When you started talking about this, you reminded me of a scene I had forgotten, which was back when I was going to Bible retreats, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where one of the very symbolic acts was to write down a sin that you thought you had committed, something that was still nagging at you, something that at a different time or in a different kind of church you might have confessed to a priest, and to write that down. And then it was dark outside, there was a campfire, and people walked up and they burned that sin away. And
yeah, wasn't this in the book of Leviticus? The scapegoat?
I should know that because I went to Bible camps and stuff, but no, I don't
know
that.
No, back in the day, I thought that you would confess your sin onto a goat, and the goat was then excommunicated or
we didn't have
banished.
We didn't have goats to banish at my camps.
Or sacrificed.
The
scapegoat.
One last question about your study is, was there a difference? Did they say anything about whether it makes any difference at all to shred versus to throw away?
None.
Okay.
Almost none, which I found really interesting because I thought the act of shredding would intensify whether or not those feelings were diminished, the anger. Not at all. So it's just about getting rid of it.
Which is even more important for all of our listeners out there because most of them probably don't have a paper shredder at home.
If it had been the case, then I would say go and buy a paper shredder.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Or go to your local library. Maybe it has a paper shredder there. Well,
a takeaway there. The next time you're angry, although I did try this out, I've told you a number of times about how angry the cars that drive by our house make me.
Mm-hmm.
I tried writing an analytical essay to myself on a piece of paper about why I get so angry when the cars go by. And then I threw that piece of paper in the trash. I'm still angry about them.
Possibly because the source of the anger keeps repeating itself every few minutes, as opposed to a professor who critiqued an essay once, right?
When I went back and read the essay, it was the reason why I'm so angry is that I bought the house to begin with, right? It goes back to something I can't fix.
Mm.
So there it is.
Okay. Well,
if it's a recurring cause, then you might have a problem.
Then we're back.
If it's just one thing, then write your thoughts down, throw them away, shred them, shred the paper. Good luck.
In your case, maybe we're back to the other anger management tactic that we talked about before.
Just breathe.
So some more science out of Japan, Tokyo in this case. It was published in Cell. And we've talked a lot before about music and emotions and how music can affect the human body. So I was kind of skeptical at first, thinking, okay, I'll look into it, but probably not going to talk about it. And it is different. And I kind of liked how it was different. So what they did in this particular study, they're asking the participants to say, when you listen to music, mm-hmm. where do you feel it? And they gave them a body map, and I don't know how large the map was. It was probably digital, and you just had to show which parts of your body were experiencing the music.
Mm-hmm. And they listened to different bits of music.
They did, in particular, 8 songs.
Okay.
Each one, when I say song, it was 10 seconds long, not a real song. 4 chords. Da, 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 da.
4 progressions, yep.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's what constitutes a song. They were artificially generated songs. It's not good music. And then they had to respond within 10 seconds, mm-hmm. where am I feeling this? Yeah. And the 10-second limit was just to make sure that they didn't have too much time to think about it.
Okay.
It should be immediate.
Yep.
So we're going to play a couple of those songs, not all 8. And the first one here... This is just going
to
be...
Do you want me to respond immediately to this or what?
Not so much, really. I'm gonna introduce these songs and kind of explain them in advance okay. so that people know what they're about to hear because
okay.
then you can hear it. And so this first song, this is just predictable and pleasing. There are no surprises.
And are we thinking, where are we feeling this in our body? Or
yeah.
Okay.
So listen to this little 10-second clip and... try to figure out which part of your body, you can even touch the part of your body that you think you're feeling this song in.
I got it in my shoulders.
Your shoulders?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, in my right and left shoulder.
Yeah, you kind of started jigging your shoulders there. Most people, and these, again, 500 people were involved in this study, stomach... heart, and very, very almost non-existent on the heat map was the brain.
A little bit of heart.
This was not an intellectual activity there, what you just experienced. This
no.
was somewhere in your abdomen.
Feel good.
Yeah, feel good. And that's just because it's a predictable, pleasing song. So we're going to listen now to song 2. Same exact sequence, only the final chord of the 4 is going to surprise you. It's not going to be what you expected.
Yeah, that went up into my brain.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And that's exactly what the heat map showed. And specifically, what they tweaked there, and they created these songs very specifically, mm-hmm. they tweaked up or ramped up the element of surprise. They wanted on that fourth beat or that fourth chord,
yeah.
they wanted to surprise you, and it moved it right up into your brain,
sure.
and the heat map reflected that. Now, with this third song, it's not going to be a surprise so much, where you think you know what's going to come and then it doesn't come, what they're going to do is on the third chord make you completely uncertain of what's coming on the fourth chord, if that makes sense. So it's
okay.
like predictable, what the heck is that?
Where am I going to feel
and
that?
And what is coming next?
Yeah. Oh, no.
The heat map would show that this one really activated the brain.
Brain, okay.
So what happens there is you can feel, it's literally uncertainty. That was the dial that they turned up there
mm-hmm.
to make you have no idea which chord is coming next.
Okay.
It wasn't that it surprised you. You thought you knew and you didn't. It was that you have no idea. And as that happens, it moves away from your abdomen and your heart and just straight up into your brain. So those were 3 clips that had a predictable beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to jump to one that is unpredictable. This whole thing.
Right from the get-go,
right,
you're going to give us some distance.
Here we go.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so Yeah.
You have no idea what's happening in that song.
No.
You don't know what to expect.
No.
You, everything's a surprise. And what isn't a surprise is that as a result of that kind of music,
brainy,
the biggest brain activity you can possibly elicit. So you're moving the experience from the chest or the abdomen up into the brain. And that is a very different experience.
So music of which we are less aware, we perceive it more in the brain. We feel it in the brain. Whereas the stuff that we know, good old home cooking major... 1-4-5 stuff, that's in the belly, in the heart.
Exactly. And interestingly, they didn't just establish that. They also had a questionnaire about emotions at the end of it.
Okay.
32 questions. Which emotions are you feeling? And it's kind of complex, but what you can take away from it is any time it's down in your stomach or your heart, it's going to elicit feelings of calmness, relief, satisfaction, nostalgia, and empathy. And very importantly, it lowers feelings of anxiety and awkwardness. Mm. Why is that important? It's, on the one hand, you can almost think of it like you could use music in a therapeutic way. If you're feeling anxious, you could listen to this predictable sort of stuff. Also, for the people out there who are, if someone's ever snobby to you about music, you know, oh, you listen to mainstream pop, predictable crap.
That only has three chords? Good. God.
Yeah, well, it could be that that is exactly what you need due to your current emotional state, right? At some points, you want something that's going to, I don't know, tickle your brain. Other times, you need something to calm you down. It's predictable. I know what's going to happen. And that was one result of the study. Intriguingly, and now I'm quoting, heightened sensations in the head were significantly correlated with particular negative emotions, such as anxiety and confusion. So that would be like a negative takeaway. If you get this brainy kind of music, you can amp up your anxiety as a result, accidentally, if it's playing on the radio. So you kind of, again, be selective about what you choose. And the final takeaway is that you talked about the shoulders. You felt it in your shoulders. That, I don't think anyone else really highlighted that on the heat map. What no one highlighted ever is no one talks about feet. Like no one, you don't feel music in your feet. Which is odd, right?
Less blood dancing, down there, possibly. I guess.
Yeah, but there's no sensation that's happening. You'll never hear anyone say, "I really felt that music in my feet," unless they're standing on top of like a bass or something.
Yeah. Unless they're upside down, maybe.
I guess that's it. So, music as therapy. If you're stressed, if you're feeling anxious, you could listen to something predictable and easy. Easy listening is okay. It's okay to love it.
Where do you feel the music? What kind of music do you like? Do you feel it in your heart? Do you feel it in your head? Who are you? Let us know at sudw.com.
And Willie, send me the information.